There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass
or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
And welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. Come in. I was just looking over some of our more historic souvenirs. And over here is the pizza cutter that De Medici used on his victims. He said he wanted a slice of their life. Now here is the bullet that Abraham Lincoln caught at Ford's Theater. Most people are surprised by the inscription that reads, "Vote Democrat." And here is the last note Cleopatra sent to Anthony before killing herself with a snake. It says, "Kiss my ass." And this is Captain Hook's artificial hand. When it was yanked from him, he is quoted to say, "Look, Ma, no hooks, huh?" But this is my favorite. This is the arrow that General Custer ate at Little Bighorn. His peers were right when they said he got the shaft, huh? Which brings us to our first scary feature, the drums of the fore and aft. A story of kids who join the army to get drilled, but instead get killed, huh?
Really?
But then we'll hear the weird circle with the house and the brain. And then the shadow will bring us Curse of the Black Widow. So scary!
You are deep in the remote hill country of Afghan, face to face with the fierce Pathan warriors, trapped into a hopeless fight from which there seems no escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to the north of India and to a battle long remembered, as Rudyard Kipling described it in his famous story, The Drums of the Fore and Aft.
When I came out from England to serve as a news correspondent with the British troops on the North Indian border, Regiment number 329A was called the Fore and Fit. Princess Hohenzollern in Zern Royal Light Infantry. Fore and Fit. But now, behind their backs, men call them the Fore and Aft. You know, when certain words are shouted in front of other barracks, the troops may come out with belts and fists. But the mere whisper of Fore and Aft brings out the men of this regiment with rifles in their hands and murder in their eyes. I think perhaps the story of how the Fore and Aft got its name may be really more the story of Jakin and Peggy Liu, two of the toughest and most lovable little monsters who ever banged a drum or tooted a fife in a military band. They were both about the same age, with curly hair and the faces of cherubs. And inside were two souls that should have belonged to a pair of devils. Oh, I must have seen them before, of course. But the first occasion I can recall was an informal regimental court the colonel was holding in the orderly room one morning. Piggy and Jakin were there, and they were in trouble, as usual.
All right, Sergeant, read the charges.
Yes, sir. The charge is made by one Smithers, a civilian, that while walking back of the bazaar at 6 p.m. last evening, he was set upon without provocation by two drummers from the corps band, known as Jakin and Piggy Lou, and by them was beaten into near insensibility.
Fighting again. Go on, Sergeant.
Mr. Smithers states further that he was struck down by the two defendants and while lying on the ground was kicked repeatedly in the face and ribs, escaping with his life only through the timely arrival of a detachment of the guard. That's all, sir.
Well, what about it, Jakin? Piggy, is this the truth?
Oh, yes, sir. We gave him what for, all right.
Confound it, you two little heathens are more trouble than all the rest of the regiment put together. You're hailed in here on charges every time you turn around. I can't very well put you in cells or hang you.
Oh, no, sir. We shouldn't want that at all.
That will do, Jakin.
Yes, sir.
All right, Sergeant, turn them over to the bandmaster and have him tan their hides. Tell them to make it one they'll remember this time.
Yes, sir.
Begging your pardon, sir, but can't we say nothing in our own defense?
That's right, sir. What if a blooming civilian city reports you for having a bit of a turn-up with a friend? Suppose he tried to get money out of you, sir, and then...
That will do, Piggy. Then you were fighting.
Well, only between ourselves, sir, and that don't count.
If you'll pardon me, Colonel, this man Smithers does have a reputation for that sort of thing, blackmail, you know. And one thing the boys don't do is lie.
It's not that we'd mind it, sir, to be called up by even a corporal. But we can't have no blinking civilians interfering with the business of Her Majesty's regiment.
All right, all right. We'll forget the birching. You're both confined to quarters for 3 days.
But, sir...
And throw away that pipe when you get outside, Piggy. You're too young to be smoking.
Yes, sir.
All right, dismissed. Confounded Kipling, I don't know what to do with the lads. They're not really bad at heart. And they've never known any home but the army.
Where did they come from, by the way?
Oh, Jakin is from some back street in London, and Piggy Lou is straight off the Calcutta docks. In both cases, ancestry unknown.
Well, they seem loyal enough to the regiment at any rate.
They are, and loyal to each other in their own way. I'm inclined to think sometimes they've got more real spirit than all of those new regulars put together.
Yes, I'd say you're overloaded with green troops, Colonel.
Overloaded? 90% of the regiment were in Manchester factories and Lancashire farm 6 months ago. Can't make a soldier that late of time.
Any chance of action fairly soon?
Off the record, we'll probably move north in about 10 days. Not to the front, of course. We'll give them a few months of guarding communication lines. Let them shake down a bit before they see any real action.
Yes, good idea.
It's the only thing to do. There's only one thing certain. This regiment is not ready for action yet. Only don't write that back to your paper.
But the gods who govern armies seldom choose the wisest plan. On the Afghan border, a large force of Pathan guerrillas began massing near the Khyber Valley, being held in check temporarily by a regiment of Highlanders and a regiment of native Gurkhas. A week later, the four and fit was ordered to march north, contact the other two regiments, and carry out joint action to disperse the enemy. Parade ground and barracks began to hum with preparations for the coming campaign. Privates walked with a new swagger. Subalterns began to snap their salutes and orders. And the young officers nearly shot one another at pistol practice. Battle. A glorious word to men who'd never fired a gun at a human being in their entire lives. But to Piggy and Jakin, the excitement was like salt in an open wound. For the band was reduced to 20 men, and the drummer boys were being left behind.
Blimey, if I'm going to let him do it to me, Jakin. Me, what's going to have a career in the army, being left behind like an old boot.
And why should you worry? Now you can stay here with that blooming girl of yours.
Oh, what's a girl when the regiment's going up to the front? And that's another thing, too. How am I going to explain to her about being left behind with the women?
What do you have to explain anything to her for? She's only 13.
Oh, I've been telling her I'd get myself a medal when the first campaign come along. Now am I going to do it now, I ask you?
Perhaps the drum major will give you a blooming medal for tooting on a fife. Biggie the musician.
Oh, Stewie. Not at the moment, I don't feel like fighting even you.
Ed and the backs are going to take Tom Kidd along. He used to be the bugler. Of course, he's 18, though.
That he is. But I can plaster the wall with him any day. And with one hand behind me back.
Perhaps we can hit him around a bit. Just enough so he can't bugle no more. You get hold his hands, Piggy, and then I'll kick him in.
No. They still wouldn't take us. Our reputations aren't what they might be, you know.
Oh, well. I'll just leave stay here and do a bit of loafing myself.
With our own regiment going into action? Why, I'll just leave have my...
Hey, look who's coming.
You know, Jake and me lad, I think I'll have a little talk with this colonelship.
Have you gone to have what they eat?
Oh, the colonel's a good old beggar. Here, blow me pipe.
Blimey, now we're in for the game.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Eh? Well, Piggy, are the drums in revolt? Am I to be pulled down right here in the open?
No, sir. I'd like the pleasure of a word with you, sir.
Mm. All right, go ahead and have it.
I'm asking you, sir. If you fought the world and all of your regiment and it was going off to active duty without you, sir, then how'd you feel?
I'm afraid I should feel a bit left out of things.
And worse. It's as bad as being a blinking civilian, if you'll pardon me, sir. But that's how Dakin and me feels about it.
You've no idea what a campaign can be like. Why, you'd flop on your face in the first 20 miles.
No, we wouldn't, sir. We're good at marching. I've told my girl I'd bring her back a medal. I've just got to go. And anyhow, if I stay here, the bandmaster will make a blessed musician out of me, sir.
I see. I think you could pass a physical...
Oh, not the slightest doubt of it, sir. We're both of us very healthy for our age. Please, sir.
All right. I suppose it's unheard of for a border regiment to take drummers along on active campaign. But if you get past the medical officer, you can both go along.
Blimey! Jakin, did you hear that? We're going up to the front. I mean, thank you, sir. Carry on.
The regiment marched out of the station 2 days later, and all those left behind lined in the road that led past the parade ground. The band stood by and played them out, waiting to fall in at the foot of the column. And although Jakin perspired and beat on his drum manfully to cover up, it was quite evident that Piggy Lou was not with the band. Jakin kept glancing at the cedar hedge behind him, and I had a rather good idea why Piggy was being detained.
You just got to be awful careful and take real good care of yourself, Piggy. You're so venturesome. I worry all the time.
It's odd, Chris. I'll grant you it's odd, but what's a man to do when his regiment's called off to active duty now? Here, give us another kiss.
Oh, Piggy.
That's more like it.
You'd have stayed here like you ought to. You could have had as many as you wanted.
And if I'd done that, Chris, you wouldn't think anything of me.
Like as not. But at least I'd had you with me, Piggy. And all the thinking in the world ain't like kissing.
And all the kissing in the world ain't like having a medal to wear on the front of your coat.
Who cares about a medal? Just stay with me, Piggy, darling. And I'll love you true forever.
Aren't you going to do that anyhow, Chris? You said you was.
Of course I am. Be lots more comfortable if you stayed here.
Oh, don't take on about it, Chris. I'll be coming back. And I'll marry you someday, too, I promise.
But when? Years and years, perhaps. Oh, you be careful, won't you, Piggy?
Oh, man has to take his chances in the army, Chris. But if it happens, I'll be thinking of you right to the last.
Oh, don't talk like that.
Oh, now, here, give us a kiss.
Peggy, get yourself on over here. We're about to fall in.
I've got to go now, Chris, my darling. Don't you be forgetting me.
Oh, I won't ever, Piggy. Here, I made something for you to take with you.
Hmm? What's this?
It's a button bag. Well, the regular soldiers carry them. I put some of my hair in it.
Well, now, that's awful kind of you, Chris.
I guess I made so good, but I didn't want nobody else to help me. Not even Mom.
Oh, I'll carry it right over me heart, so long as I'm alive.
Don't say things like that.
Peggy, come on.
Give us one more kiss now. I can't stay no longer.
Peggy.
Goodbye, Chris. Take care of yourself.
Goodbye, Peggy. Be careful. Be careful.
I'll be coming around to see you, Chris, my darling, when I get back from the war.
Peggy.
Well, it's about time. Lucky we're not both in trouble. Here, stick this blinking fife in your ugly mouth and blow on it, petticoat chaser.
Oh, shut up and beat your drum, soldier, before I decide to pound in your blooming head a bit. Tell the colonel he can shove off now.
And so the four and fit went north to the wars, first by troop train, and then on foot when the last rail ahead left them with a 7-day route march before they'd reached the front up ahead. And during those 7 weary days, the regiment began to crack. Men weren't hardened to the long miles of marching, and they found themselves dead tired before the noon of each day. The food was bad, and the water was worse. And on the second day, the snipers started in. They would hide in the tumbled rocks of the low brown hills beside the road and wait for the column to pass. And the first sign of one would be a flash and a puff of smoke, and some man on the long line of march would die without ever seeing the enemy who killed him. And even at night, the tired and nerve-shattered men could find no rest. If anything, the night hours and the dark tents were a good deal worse than the daylight hours on the dusty road.
Oh, still you booming gab until the morning, Piggy. Oh, I've got to get myself some sleep.
As if I ain't marched just as far as you have. Oh, me blooming feet's killing me.
Serves you bloody well right for getting us into this. We could have been back at the station living on the fat of the land.
And halfway to becoming musicians, like as not.
In which case, I'd be asleep in a regular bed, having decent Charlie eat for once.
I'm afraid you're not the army type, Jakin. Perhaps I shouldn't have talked my friend the colonel into letting you
come. Ah, bury the tin, or I come in and take a burst to you.
Yes, sir.
You don't have to call a blinking sergeant, sir.
There ain't no arm in it.
Peggy, that's another one of our sentries got himself killed out there.
Beggars can sneak up in the dark without making a sound. And they take their bloody long knives and slice a man open as neat as you please.
All right, hold your fire and see what you're shooting at.
Well, I wonder what they look like, Piggy. These are Pathans.
Oh, what's it matter when we can't even carry rifles? I ask you now, Jakin. Look at that. How's a man to get himself a medal when all he's got for a weapon is a bloomin' fife?
Late afternoon of the 7th day, weary, savage, and sick, their uniforms dulled and unclean, before and fit rendezvoused with the Highland Brigade.
Hi, lads. Here comes the new regiment. The four and fit. Four and fit, eh? If I ask what it is they're fit for?
Some of the men bore wounds, and some were stretcher cases. But the real casualty was the regimental morale. These raw conscripts had marched out of their station in the south with a band playing. And somehow they'd imagined that they might march glorious into battle the same way. But no band played when they slogged sullenly into the brigade encampment.
Hey, Piggy, think we have found the blinking war at last?
And what else? Ain't that a full-grown general old colonel they're talking to there?
Blimey, look at them chaps over there wearing petticoats.
A lot you know, they're islanders. And I've heard a man best take no liberties with them.
One activity might have aroused the interest of the regiment, as tired as they were. Rifle practice the enemy. And with all 700 rifles blazing together, that's the way they felt.
We've had a bit of a tough time with it coming down, sir. My men have been rather mauled. No chance of a fair return. They only want to go in some place so they can see what's before them.
Yeah, I understand, Colonel. I wish I could let you have a few days to recover, but I simply can't spare you right now.
There'll be no need of it, sir. All we're wanting is one good night's rest.
I see. Well, you can lay your camp area downstroke from the Highlanders, Colonel. And I suggest you call a general inspection before dark. We plan to attack the enemy position at dawn.
Active duty you wanted, Piggy. And how much longer do you think they're going to keep us standing here with the bloody daylight barely coming over the hills?
Oh, no. We can't have no battle till the blooming general has his morning tea now, can we?
Just take a look at all them patrons out there on the plain. Must be 8 of them to 1 us. Right down the line.
Then it makes it that much easier to get a medal.
And how do you hope to get a medal? Maybe you're going to blow their bloody eardrums out with your little fight.
More like it. We'll not even have the chance to see how the beggars look. The band, as you might have heard, is gone to wheel and retire when we reach them rocks, while the regular soldiers go on and attack the enemy.
Which, I might say, is exactly the way I'd plan it myself. I got no fondness for being sliced up like a blooming leg of lamb.
Oh, you got no spirit, you bloody little beggar.
Beggar yourself and a bigger one. Them as want spirit can have it.
Like as not, I'll have to pound your head a bit before you...
Shh! Here we go, Piggy.
Right, Charlie. Ready now.
By Parliament Court and the Great March, forward!
Watch yourself now, Jacob. And step lively. Just keep your eye on me and I'll make a bloody ear out of you.
Only someone had blundered. Someone had misread an order, and before and fit move out onto the plain to attack the enemy force alone.
Confounded, stupid conscripts. What are they up to anyhow? They've spoiled the whole plan of the battle. It's the kind of a mistake you could expect from a regiment that doesn't even know how to march.
At the clump of rock, the band wheeled and halted and continued to play, while the ranks opened to form a skirmish line and moved slowly ahead.
Hold steady, laddies. We've had no orders to move out, and therefore we'll stand fast. If the foreign fit wishes to fight like hogs, then they'll fight alone.
At 500 yards range from the enemy line, the regiment began firing at will. At will and wildly. In a few minutes, they'd thrown away half their ammunition and blinded themselves with their own smoke. And farther out on the plain, the Afghan army stood quietly, throwing occasional well-aimed bullets into the milling herd of green troops.
The blooming fools! They're bunching like a herd of sheep! Don't they realize there'll be a Ghazi charge at any minute?
Suddenly, from the main body of the Afghan troops, a small band of about 50 Pathan warriors charged forward and fell upon the startled Englishmen. These were the Ghazis. A suicide squad always thrown out ahead of the Afghan army before any main test of strength. Swinging their long, heavy knives, they struck the close-packed British line.
Why in the name of heaven don't they take open order? They'll be cut to bits.
The fore and fit wavered, shuddered away from the vicious slashes of the murderous bone-handled knives, rallied for an instant in hell, and then broke, turned tail, and ran.
They turn and run. I might say they make better speed to the rear than they make to the fore. They're anything but the fore and fit now. More like it to call them the fore and aft. It'll take them a long time to live that one down. The fore and aft.
The regiment took no thought for the wounded, for the men left behind. Nor did they stop until they jammed in the pass that led up the hill. And the band, too, was carried along with them in their panicked, headlong flight. All the band except two men.
Peggy, you think the bloody beggars can see us hiding here on the rocks?
Of course not. Seeing as how they're too busy at chasing our brave comrades. Look at them run, the blooming cowards. He did a fine way now for a British regiment to act.
Had we done the same thing, we'd not be left behind here the way we are.
What's eating you? You're comfortable, aren't you?
I may be comfortable, but I ain't easy in my mind.
Oh, stow it. Hey, somebody's dropped their canteen here. Maybe it's got rum in it.
And how can you help to tell by shaking it?
And I'll keep your dirty hands off it. I'll do the trying it out.
Well, is it, Piggy? Is it?
No, it's water. Here, have yourself a free drink on a Majesty, drummer boy. Look, them peeping beggars are starting back to their own lines. And keep your head down.
Well, now, with the blooming enemy returned, perhaps they'll come out and rescue us.
Not them, the bloody cowards. Look at them, Jake. The officers is beating them with the flats of their swords.
Can't they see the patrons ain't chased them no more?
They can't see nothing but their own precious skins. Off them, though. Maybe we ought to give them a little music. Show them it's all nice and cozy out here now.
Oh, no. Tain't for me to do nothing like that. What, we should get ourselves shot?
Oh, there ain't no enemy close by now. Come on, Jake. Take up your bloody drum there.
You positive there's only water in that canteen?
Oh-ho, so like as not you're a coward, too. The same as the rest of the regiment.
Well, I'll show you who's a coward, Piggy, my boy. And I'll be pounding your head a bit, too. The first chance I gets. Take your blooming fife there and stick it in your ugly face.
Well, now, so you have got a bit of spirit. Maybe I'll speak to my old friend the colonel about it.
Oh, shut up and start blowing. Ready?
Ready all? Now!
Biggie.
Back and forth a time or two in full sight. Then we'll wait in the rocks till the battle starts. They watching us?
You be sure they're watching us. Ah, yes. They're watching us, all right.
Time held still. And even the Afghan snipers forgot their weapons while two armies watched the tiny red-coated figures marching back and forth on the battlefield alone.
Hey, and I tell you certain, there's a pair of brave laddies down there.
All right, the blinking cowards! Look at them out there! Are them two children the only brave men in the regiment?
Men of the fore and aft lifted their heads, fingered their rifles, and stared without moving. And out there on the silent plain, back and forth, marched Jakin and Piggy.
Play these blooming instruments all day long? Ain't the blight is ever gonna come back?
Shut up, Jake, and keep playing.
Well, all I might say is, I shouldn't ever let you talk me into this. I ain't cut out for active duty anyhow. I should have bloody well feel more comfortable if I was back. If I was back.
Jake. Oh, you blinking heathen blighters, you've killed Jakin. All right, I'll show you who's afraid of you. Come on, you blooming coward.
Two armies saw them die from the sniper's bullets. Two armies and the men of the fore and aft.
All right. Men of the regiment, what now? Those two at least were brave enough to know how to die.
Pick bayonets! Ready about and form skirmish line. This time we attack and there'll be no turning back.
Look at them ladies, the fore and aft. They're going back to fight.
Aye, look at them run.
Here's how it should have been done in the first place. They'll not turn in our butts again.
Aye, ladies. And now is the time for us. Orders are no. Here's where we join the fight. Ready.
Late afternoon saw the Afghan army wiped out. And the general explained to me how everything had gone according to his plan. And how he hoped I'd cable that back to my paper in London right away. I turned and left him then. And walked out across the silent battlefield. Walked out among the silent dead. The two tiny figures lay quite close together. Jakin fallen across his broken drum, And Piggy Lou, with the fife still clenched in his dirty fist. A bulge under his tunic caught my eye, and I reached in and drew out a button bag embroidered crudely with the name Chris.
I made it for you myself, Piggy, my darling. And I've put some of my own hair inside of it.
I'll wear it right next to me heart, Chris, so long as I'm alive.
I thought how Chris would soon forget, and how the world's memory is no longer than hers. The sun was sinking away in the west. The button bag in my hand was soaked and damp. And over the left breast of Piggy's grimy uniform, over the pocket where citations are usually worn, a bright red stain had spread out through the coarse wool, looking so very much like the bright red ribbon that goes with a medal.
Kids, wasn't that scary, huh? So scary. The poor children, they got wasted. Oh, well, the little girl tried to stop them, but I guess her warnings fell on deaf ears, huh? Tell me about it. Too bad, too. They wanted to impress her so. Yet the only medals they ever saw blurred as they went through them, huh? Oh, that's what she said. Yes, war isn't kid stuff. It's kid stuffing all over the battlefield, huh? Maybe that was going a bit far, but then again, maybe when they were hit in the head. In which case, you could say the last drums beaten were their eardrums, huh? But you wonder why they ever went. I mean, really, at that age, the only draft they had to worry about was the one that blew through them, huh? Well, I guess it's one way to permanently avoid school, huh? You see, now, even if someone hauled them in, they'd be rejected for being too late for class, huh? Though, personally, I don't think that they needed any more education. They were both certainly well-read. Blood red, huh? Anything but olive green, though. I know folks who are literally exhausted to death by that color. It's called dying from army fatigue, huh? but really. You can rest in peace assured, though, that fatigue is the only thing you'll be safe from in the next weird circle story, The House and the Brain So Scary!
In this cave by the restless sea, we are met to call from out of the past stories, strange and weird. Bellkeeper, toll the bell so that all may know we are gathered again in the Weird Circle.
In man's mind. This is a tale of the house and the brain. Come with me to London, through the heavy fog of the city, to a large house in the suburbs. A young couple enter the portals of that house to attend an art auction.
Well, hello, Jim. We've been looking all over for you. We've got quite a crowd here today.
Paul Whitney, Sandra, I'm glad you've come. I thought you two were refugees from this sort of thing.
Well, frankly, Jim, I've suddenly conceived a passion for good oil paintings, and I'm going to buy this fabulous painting of the ancient cutthroat.
Well,
to tell you the truth, Jim, she suddenly conceived a passion for cutthroats, ancient or otherwise.
Oh, my husband abuses me.
I'm too nice to her, or she'd never be interested in any other man.
But, darling, the man in the portrait's been dead 400 years.
Dead or living, he's not beyond your charm.
Oh, but my husband loves me, Jim. Must be my fatal fascination.
Yeah.
But I didn't come here to talk with you, even if it is fun. I came here to see that oil painting.
Oh, it's quite a painting.
Yes, so we've heard.
It's in my study. Come and take a look before the auction starts. Hmm?
Now, don't fall in love with it, Sandy. No matter how you feel about 15th century reprobates, I'm not going to spend a fortune buying useless pictures.
Well, there's the picture. What do you think?
He has a face you'll never forget.
And a reputation. Yes, sir, he lived a full life. You know, he was supposed to have been fabulously wealthy. But when he died, his fortune disappeared.
Oh, my dumpling aunt. He looks like the kind of man who sticks pins in people for the devil of it.
Sandra.
The strangest thing about the picture is the man's eyes. You get the feeling that the eyes are alive.
Yes, very definitely. Clever work.
Paul.
What's the matter with you, Sandra?
I could have sworn I've seen that man in London recently.
What man?
The one in the picture.
What? He's been dead 400 years.
Stop snickering at me, Jim. I know what I've seen.
Impossible. The only thing left of the Honorable Cutthroat Richards is the house on Orchard Street. He built it 450 years ago, and it's never been really habitable since.
Why?
Well, this is your chance to laugh at me. It's haunted.
Haunted?
Oh, not really.
Really?
Oh, Jim, I've never met a ghost.
And you never will, Sandra.
Jim, oh, Jim, please, imagine a really, truly ghost.
Wonderful, Jim, take us over. Or better yet, I'll rent the place for a week. I've heard a lot about ghosts, but I've never been able to pin one down. You know, I've been a student of the occult for a long time.
Jim, please.
Oh, Sandra, I'm serious. It's dangerous business, this ghost hunting.
Please, fella, anything to get Sandra's mind off buying that picture.
Very well, but you'll find some very real ghosts over there. The housekeeper, Mrs. Browning, will rent you a room if you want one. But she's the only person who's ever been able to stay in the old house.
Thanks, old man. Come along, Sandra.
But the picture.
Hang the picture, my sweet. I've got a genuine ghost for you.
The door's open all by itself.
There's no one there. Doors aren't supposed to open by themselves, Paul.
Well, what do you expect? The house is haunted, isn't it? Door slammed by itself, too.
Woo, tricky place, isn't it?
You frightened?
Not in the least. And it isn't my knees that are shaking, pet. It's yours. Wonder where the housekeeper is. Her name's Mrs. Browning. Call her and see what happens.
All right. Mrs. Browning!
Don't poke me, Paul!
I didn't poke you.
Well, I didn't poke myself. Oh, hey. I wonder if we're alone. Look behind me, Paul. If it's a ghost, I don't want to meet it quite yet.
Silly, it's broad daylight. Anybody knows ghosts never appear until nightfall.
Paul, look. It's a child's footprint right there in front of me. A wet footprint.
Great heavens.
No, another one. Just like the footprint of a child who's taken a bath. Oh, my chubby, yeah.
Listen.
The footprints lead upstairs.
Shall we follow?
Well, it's the obvious thing to do.
Ghastly cold in here, Sandy, isn't it?
Ghostly cold, at any rate.
You're not quite up to form, old girl. You sure you want to go through with this?
No, I'm positive, almost anyway.
Sandy, the footprints, they disappear.
Oh, maybe it's all done with mirrors.
Good afternoon. Do come in the sitting room.
Oh, you must be Mrs. Browning. I'm Sandra Whitney, and this is my husband.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Mr. Danvers told me you were coming. Won't you be seated?
Thank you, Mrs. Browning.
I hope my stepdaughter didn't frighten you.
Your stepdaughter? Well, I didn't see anyone.
Naturally. She's dead.
You mean the footprints we saw?
Yes, of course. You didn't see or hear anything else?
No.
Expecting anyone?
Yes. They're coming for me shortly. My time is up, and I must die in the way they've planned it.
They?
Those who live in this house, Mrs. Whitney.
Oh, come, Mrs. Browning, you don't really believe ghosts actually live here.
Believe it? I know it. You see, Mr. Whitney, when I was first married 40 years ago, my husband, my stepdaughter, and myself moved into this house. They were here then.
Why didn't you move out?
Oh, we became used to them. Then my stepdaughter died. My husband had an unfortunate accident, and I was left alone.
You've lived here alone ever since?
Yes. Waiting for them to take me.
Mrs. Browning, how much will you charge my wife and myself for an apartment here by the week?
Charge? Nothing. Nothing at all. Anybody who has the courage to stay here is most welcome. But I advise you against it. Listen.
What is it?
Souls crying for release. Release from him.
Oh, come, Mrs. Browning.
You don't believe me? You will when you move in. When can I expect you?
Tonight at 8. How about it, Paul?
That sounds jolly.
You'll use the east wing. I'll have a fire lit for you. But let me warn you once again. They'll be waiting for you. Day and night.
Sandra, you're back?
Of course, Paul. Down, Blackie. Down, I say. Oh, if you keep squirming, I'll never get you on a leash.
I'd better take some pistols along with us.
Well, I'm not at all sure you can shoot a ghost, Paul.
I'm not at all sure it is a ghost. Something awfully phony about all that.
Oh, no. My intuition says there were ghosts in that house, darling, and I've a very perceptive intuition.
Sandra, you're not going to take Blackie with you.
Well, of course I am. He's a watchdog, isn't he?
But a dog...
Now, darling, remember how nicely he caught pheasant last year.
But pheasant aren't the same thing as ghosts at all.
Stuff and nonsense. You ready?
All ready. Here's your coat, dear.
Oh, look out the window, Paul. So peaceful out there.
You've always been partial to twilight.
Oh, reminds me of the time you courted me. It was such a nice time. Paul, that man, the one on the street.
What man?
The one standing right out there. Look at him. That's the same man whose portrait we saw at Jim Danvers' house today.
Sandra, where are you going?
To talk to him, Pat, of course. My chubby aunt. It is him. Oh, excuse me, sir. I couldn't help noticing you and...
You noticed me?
You are Mr. Richards, aren't you?
I've been known to many by many names.
Oh, dear, please pardon me if I'm rude, but... Well, how in the devil did you manage to stay alive for 400 years?
You will notice my eyes. Look deep. Deep.
Oh, let me go. Let me go.
Deeply into my eyes.
Of greater power, greater tender.
You've never seen me before. You don't know me. You can never remember me again.
Keep walking, Sandra. I hope you're properly ashamed of yourself, approaching strange men and asking them silly questions.
Well, I'm sorry, Paul. It was stupid of me, but anybody can be wrong.
Well, of course they can, but on the face of it, it was silly. Expecting a man who was alive 400 years ago to be roaming around loose.
It wasn't a matter of looseness, Pet. It was a matter of liveness. Now, come on, stop being a husband and hold my arm.
I ought to tear it off and beat you over the head with it.
He's so virile. But I love him.
Well, come along, Sandy. There's your haunted house ahead. We don't want to keep Mrs. Browning waiting.
Or the ghost.
Mr.
that door again.
Insidious feeling, door opening and slamming.
Mrs. Browning! Mrs. Browning!
I'm in the east wing, Mr. Whitney, just lighting the fire.
You better go on up. This hall's drafty.
Hey, Paul, more than cold in here. It's almost as if something or somebody is draining your body of all warmth.
That's a pleasant thought, Sandy. Now that you've scared yourself stiff, move.
Well, I was just getting in the mood for ghosts. Where's the east wing?
This way, Mrs. Whitney.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Browning. Well, this room looks cheerful.
It's as gay as my mood. Nice fire, nice candle. Quiet, quiet, Blackie. You scare somebody.
A dog scare somebody? Not tonight. They came tonight.
What came tonight?
You'll see. Better make yourselves at home while you can.
Blackie, sit down. Over here, Blackie. Look at him, Paul. The hairs on his head are standing on end.
Be quiet, Blackie.
Blackie!
Look! I told you they were here.
A luminous mass. A blue mass. Sandy, be careful.
It's materializing.
Coming for me. I knew it. Coming for me.
Mrs. Browning, Paul. Fingers are choking her. Good heavens.
Mrs. Browning.
Paul, Paul, stop this horrible thing.
Coming for me.
It's horrible.
It's all right, Connor. All right, darling.
Oh, it's gone, hasn't it?
Yes. It's gone, but Mrs. Browning, she's dead.
Reconstruct the scene of the crime. Nobody tells Detective Hodges that a flesh-and-blood woman gets bumped off by a ghost.
But I saw it myself. Oh, be quiet, Blackie. If you'd only relax, Detective Hodges, and go away, we'd catch the ghost for you.
Quiet!
I'm only trying to help, but Blackie, stop!
Sandra, you're only confusing the issue.
Paul's right, Sandra. Sit down over here.
Jim Danvers, if you side with Paul, I'll never speak to you.
Now, Mr. Whitney, if you don't mind, we'll go over the details again. What happened?
Well, Mrs. Whitney and I were here in this room with Mrs. Browning when a blue mass suddenly floated in the door. The lights in the fireplace dimmed, the candles were extinguished, and Mrs. Browning began to scream.
Why?
Because she saw a ghost. It's really all so simple.
Sandra, my dear.
And then what happened?
The mass suddenly materialized, at least sufficiently for us to see two hands.
Two hands without a body.
The hands reached out, grasped Mrs. Browning by the throat, and
that was that.
Thank you, Mrs. Whitney. I suppose you expect me to believe that story?
There's no reason for you to doubt Mr. Whitney's word, Detective Hodge.
I'm not saying there is. But there was only three people in this room, and one of them is dead. Everybody's under arrest. Everybody, do you hear?
Oh, Paul, it's here again.
Look, Detective Hodge. Paul, Sandra.
Oh, Paul, for heaven's sake.
Well, what is it?
An axe murderer. An ectoplasm.
Sandra, don't be funny.
Let's get out of this house before it gets all of us.
It's gone.
Yes, it's gone. Now do you believe us, Detective Hodge?
Yes. Yes, I believe you. I'll have Mrs. Browning's body removed to the morgue right away.
Paul, if you insist on staying in this house overnight, I'll not be responsible for what happened.
But, Jim, I'm convinced that there are no such things as ghosts. Now, please, Jim, take Sandra back home and leave me.
I'm not budging without you, Pet.
Sandra, don't be foolish.
Well, no matter what you two do, I'm not staying here.
Oh, go, old Fuzzy Beard. Take thy tired body and deliver it to a safe, warm bed. Poor Jim. Scared of a little ghost. It's 11 p.m. already.
Well, good night, Paul, Sandra.
Nighty-night, Jim.
What was that?
You mean the footfalls?
Yes, what is it?
The housekeeper's dead stepdaughter.
You see? It's all so simple.
Good grief. Good night.
Oh, we've been all through the house, Paul, and I'm dead tired. Come on, let's go to bed.
You go to bed. I'll sit up and read these letters we found in the attic.
Here, Blackie, come here, come here. Now lie down next to me. There, poor Blackie, poor doggy. You don't like the ghosties, do you, Pat? Poor, poor Blackie.
Hey, this letter's interesting.
What is it?
Evidently a letter from the housekeeper to her husband. A love letter. She talks about her brother's child. It seems her brother left his money to his daughter and she handled the estate for the child.
That's jolly. Maybe that's the child she calls her stepdaughter.
Let's see what it says. Listen. Since we have managed the child's end, you and I are more than lovers. We are partners in many things.
Sounds as if they murdered the child.
Yes, it does. Sandra, I wonder if my theory's right. If people felt strong passions, and if those passions linger in a house after the people have gone, couldn't that create a heavy psychic atmosphere?
Well, those fingers that murdered Mrs. Browning were more than heavily psychic. Unhook the collar of my dress, Paul.
Where will I put the letters down on the dressing table here?
Just a top hook.
Better keep these pistols handy just in case. Something about a gun that gives me courage. Funny.
Oh, it's midnight. I'm tired and nothing's funny.
You know Mrs. Browning's sitting room? It seems to be an extra addition to this house. It juts out from the rest of the building like a sleeping porch.
What's funny about that?
Well, that horrible cold and the footfalls all seem to emanate from that room.
Oh, you and your logical mind. Oh.
What's the matter, Sandy?
Oh, look. The fire's dimming.
Oh. Oh.
Just like a great black shadow standing in front of it.
Give me my gun.
Here, dear. Shh, Blackie. Shh.
Look, Sandy. A hand reaching out from the wall.
The letters. It's got the letters.
Great Scott.
Oh, my chubby aunt.
Watch it.
It's the hand of the housekeeper.
How do you know?
It's got the same ring on she had on this afternoon. If that's not a ghost, I've never seen one.
The fire's going out, Sandra.
Sandra! It's all around us!
Sandra! Sandra!
Your will against mine, my will is greater.
No.
Succumb, succumb. My will is greater.
No, you're a shadow.
And you are a mere mortal who knows no secrets beyond the veil. I control the world of shadows. Succumb, fool, succumb.
No, no, go away. You're nothing but an image.
You will die by my command in this house. You will die before morning. Admit my will.
No, no, I will not admit your will. Sandra, you're safe now on your own home. Just lie still, darling, and drink this.
Oh, Paul.
I was a fool to allow you to stay in that accursed place last night. I ought to have my head examined.
I came over as soon as I got your message, Paul.
Oh, come on in, Jim. Sandra's recovering from a bit of a shock.
Yes, I heard about it. I warned you, Paul, that house is definitely haunted. I'm going to board it up. It's completely useless.
No, that's not the answer, Jim. It isn't ghosts. At least, not in the real sense of the word.
Why, Paul, after what you went through, you say that?
It's too malignant for a ghost. Do you believe in the power of hypnotism?
Well, I've heard some amazing theories about it anyway.
Well, I believe some power controls that house.
Well, that's still ghosts.
No, because the brain that controls the house is still alive. I'm convinced of it.
Well, where do you think this man who controls the house is?
He might be thousands of miles away. Remember you said that the eyes in the picture of the fabulous Richards seems alive?
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Not at all. In some crazy mad manner, Richards has kept himself alive all these 400 years. In some hypnotic way, he controls that house.
Well, if your theory is right, how can we break his control?
Well, I'm certain that his control emanates from the little sitting room which once belonged to Mrs. Browning.
Yes?
Now, if you'll let me, I'd like to hire workmen and tear that room off the rest of the house.
Oh, but Paul...
Well, the room is only an extra addition, Jim. It can't do any harm to try.
Okay, pull up more of that flooring.
Did you hurt yourself climbing that partition, Sandra?
No. Oh, imagine a secret room down here, Paul, right beneath the sitting room. You see, Jim, Paul was right. That's like finding a box with a false bottom.
That's all for now, boys.
Careful of your head, Sandra. This room isn't very big.
But it's as cold as cold storage.
Well, now you know how a hunk of beef feels in an icebox.
That's gay.
A musty old room. Bed and four walls.
And two drawers built into the wall over there.
All modern conveniences.
Try to open them. They look rusty. Just pull.
All right. There. The drawer's open.
Oh, nothing but a lot of musty old clothes.
Listen, Paul.
Nothing unusual, Jim. Just the same footfalls we've been hearing all along.
I'm beginning to become quite fond of them.
Look, here.
Why, it's a miniature painting.
Yes, a painting of Mr. Richards. Look at it. The same face as that painting in my house.
Look at the eyes in the miniature. Paul, they're alive.
Great heavens.
They're moving. You better put that portrait down, Paul.
Yes, they are alive. Living matter in a painting.
Oh, Paul, it's getting colder in here all the time. I feel faint. Faint and... Is this something unearthly? He's moving around.
Open the next drawer, Paul. Hurry, I don't like this growing cold at all.
It won't budge. The blasted thing. Oh, there it is.
Why, Paul, there's a thin china saucer full of crystal liquid with a compass floating on it.
That's a strange thing. There's an inscription written in the drawer.
What's it say?
As this compass moves... So my will dominates everything within these four walls. Everything dead or alive. Accursed be the house and restless the dwellers therein.
What's it mean?
This is the brain, Sandra.
Oh.
Richards controls this instrument through hypnotism. He can control a piece of paper or a chair or even the souls of the dead.
Then this house is haunted.
Yes, haunted by a malicious, malignant will. It keeps a man's spirit roving restlessly after death.
Paul! Paul, look! Look in that corner!
Mr. Richards, you are alive.
Yes, alive, quite alive, because I will to live. Very clever deduction, Mr. Whitney.
Deduction?
Yes, I heard your keen analysis of my activities.
You are a hypnotist, then.
I have been powerful for 400 years. Your blind stumbling onto my secret will not stop me now. I can will anything... I will the specters of the past to re-enter this room.
In heaven's name, man, stop this.
Oh, that black shadow. It's here with us, closing in.
Yes, closing in. All those who have died in this house are my slaves, as you will be my slaves in a very few brief seconds.
You are not the brain controlling this house. You gave that power to this compass. You transferred your power to this moving needle. Am I right, Mr. Richards?
Put that compass down.
Oh, no, I'll destroy it, Mr. Richards. No, you're completely powerless to harm us.
Watch out, Paul. This partition's going to crumble.
Paul!
Sandra!
Gosh, Paul, it's good to be back in our own home.
What happened to Mr. Richards when the partition collapsed, Jim?
Well, the workmen searched the debris around the house for Mr. Richards' body, but no trace of him was found. I'm afraid that he escaped.
Oh, no.
You mean he's still alive and free, Jim?
Yes, indeed. That's just what I mean.
Well, he won't be for long, Sandra. People everywhere will be warned, and every corner of this earth will be looking for him. Even his will can't defy the world, Sandra. No one man can ever fight the world.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have heard another immortal tale in The Weird Circle. bellkeeper. Toll the bell. Be here in this lonely cave by the restless sea once again next time for another immortal tale in The Weird Circle.
The Weird Circle is distributed exclusively by Nostalgia Broadcasting Corporation, Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Kids, that one was scary, though, wasn't it? That picture of Mr. Richards coming back to life after all those years. That's what I call a living portrait. How about you, huh? They must have painted that thing when he was sent to prison, a pre-photographic mud shot of sorts. Little did the warden suspect he'd die to beat his life sentence, huh? But I think, though, seriously, he must have resented that experience nevertheless. You could sure tell he had an axe to grind, huh? 400 years. Why, he could have been a cowboy outlaw. That could explain why he liked to decapitate its victims. He wanted to cut them off at the air passage, huh? Hey, maybe that explains why his soul still roams. The other souls didn't like his unconventional style, so they booted him from Boot Hill, huh? But the only thing I can't figure out is all that hocus pocus. Like, how did he escape the collapsing house? Seemed impossible. Oh, well, I guess he just had a ghost of a chance, huh?
Oh, yes. Afraid so.
Then again, maybe he didn't escape. I mean, with a compass brain busted, maybe his magic backfired and made him cryptnotized, huh?
Really?
Which brings us to our next super scary feature, The Shadow in Curse of the Black Widow. So scary!
Today's story, The Mark of the Black Widow. Suppose we have our coffee in here in the study, Margot.
Oh, I'd love to, Dr. Grant. In fact, I've been waiting for years for an excuse to see the inside of this room. Haven't you, Lamont?
Yes. If I'd anticipated this opportunity, Dr. Grant, I'd have brought along my camera and notebook.
I see.
I think you have an exaggerated idea about the contents of this room.
Oh, but it's fascinating. Just look around this place, Lamont. Mummy cases, statues, and old stone carvings.
Yes. I presume that most of these pieces are Egyptian, aren't they, Dr. Grant?
Yes, that's right. I did a good deal of work in Egypt about 20 years ago. You know, excavations and that sort of thing.
I should imagine that there's a fascinating story that goes with every one of these relics.
Some of them have a legend, yes, Margot.
About a pharaoh's curse, perhaps? Or an evil spirit?
Margaret's been reading too many horror stories, Doctor.
No, she hasn't, Lamont. I myself have seen too many examples of strange misfortunes that have befallen the defilers of certain tombs to treat that statement lightly.
Really? Well, I was only kidding, you know, Doctor.
Well, I personally have been exposed to one of those ancient curses. Well,
say, I've got to hear more about this.
Well, it's a very long and I'm quite sure a very dull story, so we'll save it for some other time, shall we? Besides, this is not a night for mystic yarns. See, the moon is too bright and the sky is full of...
What? Why, someone threw a rock through that window.
Yes.
It just missed your head, Doctor.
Look, someone's running across the lawn.
Well, it's too late to catch him, whoever it was. Say, there seems to be a note attached to this stone.
Well,
yes. Perhaps you better read it, Doctor.
Let me see. Listen to this. Remember Egypt, Pharaoh's tomb. He who was dead is returning. When the votes are cast, I remind you of our duty. The signature is a drawing of a spider.
What in the world is it all about?
Do you understand it, Doctor?
Perfectly. He who was dead is returning. Lamont, that story I said I'd tell you some other time.
Yes?
I'll tell it to you now because it concerns this note I just received. Do you mind?
Mind? I should say not.
Well, about 20 years ago,
3 other scientists and myself, all of us young and ambitious. We're working on the excavation of a tomb on the upper Egyptian Nile. One day we broke through a hidden wall and came upon a room that was almost crammed to the ceiling with rare and precious jewels. We stood in awe at the entrance to that room. Our eyes dazzled.
Taylor! Hollister! Do you see what I see?
Yes!
There can't be this many precious jewels in the world!
Hey, fellas, what did you find?
Well, do you think that was worth digging for, Willoughby?
Worth digging for? Worth digging for? Why, those jewels! Those jewels! Why, they're millions!
Well, what do we do now?
What do you mean?
Do we notify the authorities and turn this over to them?
Why, yes, I guess so, of course.
Why?
What?
I'm asking why. Why should we give up this fortune?
Yes, but Taylor, that's customary. It's a thing to do.
Well, who would ever have to know about it? Only we four have the knowledge of this hidden room. Now, do we tell the authorities?
Taylor, you're not serious about this? Why, if we were found out, we'd be disgraced, ruined in our profession.
Wouldn't a few $1 million compensate that ruin?
Taylor's right, Hollister.
Of course I'm right. All we have to do is keep quiet and we're millionaires. Millionaires! Why, we could buy the world!
So you see, Margot and Lamont, 3 of us did keep quiet. But Hollister talked. He told the authorities about our discovery. We were all resentful of what we thought was his disloyal treachery. We even made idle threats on his life. Yes, I was in accord with the others. My only excuse now is that I was very young. However, we soon forgot those threats as we lost ourselves in hard work. And then one day, when our job was almost done, the 4 of us were standing in the main excavation. Suddenly, we heard a shout of warning from the bank above.
Look out! Look out below! The wall is caving in!
Frantically, we scrambled for the opposite embankment. Then from behind us, we heard a cry of distress.
Wait, I've twisted my ankle! Help me!
It was Hollister. We turned, started back to him, and then... We were too late. Hollister was buried beneath that avalanche.
Oh, how awful.
Laborers dug for his body all that night and into the next day, but it wasn't found. And the next evening, we sailed for the States.
What a horrible death.
No, you're wrong. You see, Hollister didn't die.
What?
We learned later that he reached one of the tunnels before the landslide occurred and covered him. And 3 days later, he emerged from the tomb alive.
Well, that's remarkable. But say, that's part of the message, then. He who was dead is returning.
Exactly. Hollister came back to the States today. Been in Egypt all these years. Done some remarkable work, too.
What does the rest of the message mean? About doing your duty when the votes are cast.
Well, you see, Hollister's name is up for membership in the American chapter of the Royal Order of Scientists. Perhaps he fears that we will blackball him because of our ancient grudge.
Is it quite an honor to belong to the society?
The greatest honor that can be bestowed on a scientist. Naturally, Hollister's anxious to get it.
Then you think this message is from Hollister?
I'm not sure. But he has nothing to fear. Neither Taylor, Willoughby, or myself have any ill feeling toward him.
How does he feel about all of you?
Oh, that's a different story. I've heard reports that he thinks that landslide was a deliberate attempt on his life, which, of course, is not true at all.
Well, that explains everything in the message but the signature.
You mean the drawing of a spider?
Yes.
Well, that drawing was on the wall of the room that was filled with jewels. The symbol of the spider is an ancient, never-failing Egyptian curse. Death.
Mr. Raymond Hollister.
Yes?
Will you stand, please? You have petitioned for membership in the Royal Order of Scientists?
I have.
I regret to inform you, sir, that one black ball having been dropped in the box, your application is rejected.
Lamont, I asked you to come here tonight to help Taylor, Willoughby, and me find Hollister.
I see, Dr. Grant.
Yes, we must find him. We've got to convince him that we were not responsible for his being rejected to our membership.
You say, Mr. Taylor, that Hollister disappeared the day after the voting took place?
Yes, that's right.
Well, isn't there any way of finding out who did blackball him, Dr. Grant?
No. No way in the world, Margot.
No, there isn't any. My, I'm warm. My dinner jacket seems to be a bit too much tonight. Grant, I think you should tell Mr. Cranston about Hollister's threat, too.
Oh, yes, that's right, Willoughby. It seems the secretary of the club told us later that Hollister vowed vengeance against all 3 of us.
Vengeance?
Yes, that's right.
Well, as he seems to have vanished so completely, I wouldn't worry too much about that.
Well, frankly, I am worried about it, Mr. Cranston. Hollister's crazed brain is liable to seek complete revenge.
Oh, I'm not worried on that score, Taylor. Are you, Willoughby?
I say, are you Willoughby?
Well, he's fallen asleep. Maybe it's the heat in that dinner jacket that did it.
Oh, I can't say that I blame him. Such a sultry night.
Willoughby, come on, old man. Wake up.
Wait, gentlemen. The side lights are poor. Put on that overhead light.
Why? Why, what's the trouble?
There you are.
Willoughby. Willoughby.
What's wrong with him, Lamont?
Willoughby is dead.
Well, Lamont, where are we going tonight? Another explorer's get-together?
No, no.
Well, why all the mystery? Just who are we going to visit?
Mr. Willoughby.
Oh, I see. Well, that's it. Mr. Willoughby? He's dead, Lamont.
Yes, I know.
Well, did you plan to meet him at any special place?
Oh, yes.
Under an old tombstone, perhaps.
Oh, no. A much cheerier place than that.
Where?
The morgue.
Oh, well, the what?
I'm very curious to learn just why Mr. Willoughby died so suddenly.
Well, are you going to examine his body?
Well, not exactly, Margot. That's going to be a job for the Shadow.
Well, you're all sleeping peacefully tonight, my pretty. Yes. I like to see that. It shows that we're all friends here. Yes, all friends, yes. This lid down, I must open it. Oh, you're rather standoffish, my pretty. Oh, no, no, you're not too pretty, are you? But you see, I like the lids open so that you all may become acquainted. You're all brothers now, you know. Yes, brothers in death. Whether you be rich or poor. Hey?
Old man.
Hey, what? What was that? Did someone speak?
I spoke.
Who are you?
I am called the Shadow.
The Shadow? But I don't see you.
No, my hypnotic powers have clouded your mind, made me invisible to your eyes.
Oh. That's very clever, yes. Very clever. Yes, you're a remarkable man, Mr. Shadow. Take it on the word of the morgue keeper.
These bodies. All these bodies here. Are they in your care?
Oh, yes, of course.
Among these bodies, is there one named Willoughby? He came here last night, died very suddenly.
Oh, that one, yes. He's over there on that table. He was a heart case, you know.
Have you yourself noticed anything unusual about the body?
No different from the others.
If you don't mind, I'd like to examine him myself.
I don't mind if he doesn't.
Now, let me see. Head untouched. No marks on neck, chest. Say, this gelatin substance on the chest, covering a little red mark. Have you noticed this before?
No. I never pay much attention to those things in a routine case of death.
In the future, old man, you should. Then you'd learn, just as I have, that this man's death was not routine. It was murder.
Who are we visiting now, Lamont? The morgue?
No. Mr. Taylor and Dr. Grant.
Live people.
They may not be before we get them.
What do you mean, Lamont?
I just examined Willoughby's body in that undertaking parlor.
And?
Mr. Willoughby was murdered, Margot.
Lamont, how?
I don't know yet.
Then Hollister did carry out his threat.
How'd you go, Margot? Too early to accuse anyone right now.
Well, have you notified the police, Lamont?
No. I didn't think it advisable yet.
What makes you believe that Mr. Willoughby was murdered?
A red mark that I discovered on his chest. A red mark that was covered with a gelatin-like substance.
Lamont, come in. I left the door open. Oh, Miss Lane, I didn't realize that you'd come along. You must pardon my appearance,
please.
It's
all right, Doctor. I've seen men in a shirt sleeves before.
Come into the study. Taylor's here. I called him.
Come along, Margot.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Cranston. Oh, you too, Miss Lane.
I mean, I apologize once more for my appearance, Miss Lane. It was so warm.
You think nothing of it, Doctor.
I have a dressing gown around here someplace.
Knowing the doctor as I do, Miss Lane, he won't feel easy until he's properly attired. Here's your dressing gown, Doctor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Taylor. There we are now. What is all this about, Lamont?
Well, Dr. Grant, first of all, I have just learned that your associate, Mr. Willoughby, was murdered.
Murdered?
Hollister. Hollister's making good his threat.
It's too early to accuse anyone yet, Mr. Taylor. Our main concern now is to save both of you from meeting Willoughby's fate.
Well, is there really any danger?
Yes, I'm sure there is.
But, Lamont, how do you...
Dr. Grant!
Quick, catch him. He's falling. Get Dr. Grant. Margot, get that chair over here. Dr. Grant! He's dead.
Oh, no.
Oh, this is too much. I'm the last one left. I'm going for the police.
Come back here, Taylor.
No, I'm going to protect myself.
Oh, that was a silly thing, but... Margot, come here.
Yes?
Look here. Do you see this red mark on the doctor's chest?
Yes.
Same gelatin substance, the same I found on Willoughby. But this time I recognize the mark.
What is it?
It's the bite of a poisonous insect. And unless I miss my guess, that insect is a spider. The ancient Egyptian symbol of death.
What on earth are you doing crawling around the room on your hands and knees?
I'm looking for a very important piece of evidence.
Well, you're also looking very silly.
Well, if Taylor really went for the police, I want to find this evidence before the good defenders of the law overrun the house.
But if you're trying
Margo, to... Margo, please stand right where you are.
Why?
Don't move. My evidence is on your shoe top.
Oh, what is it?
If I'm not mistaken, it's a deadly, poisonous black widow spider.
Hold on.
Steady now. There. I've knocked him off your shoe top. Get me that ashtray, quick.
Here you are.
I want to catch it alive.
Oh, you got him. He's under that ashtray. Oh, he's huge, isn't he?
One of the biggest of the species. Margo, will you answer the phone, please?
Yes, surely. Hello?
Hello. Is Mr. Cranston there?
Yes. Who is it, please?
This is Mr. Taylor's valet. Would you ask Mr. Cranston if he could come to Mr. Taylor's home at once?
Yes. What's the trouble?
Mr. Taylor has just been shot.
Right this way, sir.
Have you called a doctor?
The doctor just left, sir.
The wound serious?
The doctor didn't tell me, sir. In this room here, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Is that you, Cranston?
Yes, Mr. Taylor. How are you feeling?
Oh, fair. Just fair. The bullet grazed my shoulder.
Well, tell me, what happened?
Well, I really don't know.
I thought that you left us to go to the police.
Yes, that was my intention, but when I left Dr. Grant's house, I saw someone lurking in a doorway across the street, and I became panicky and came right here to my study, intending to call the police from here.
I see. And then what happened?
Well, when I picked up the phone, something or someone was moving behind that curtain. I replaced the phone, and then the shot was fired. That's all I remember.
I see. You didn't actually see your assailant?
No, but it was Hollister. I know it was. Who else would make an attempt on my life?
And may I see the wound, please?
Well, the doctor said I shouldn't be disturbed.
Oh, is this the coat you were wearing?
Yes. You can see yourself where the bullet penetrated.
My gun must have been fired at very close range, Mr. Taylor. The powder burns indicate that the gun was within a foot of your shoulder when it was fired.
Yes, it was close.
But I thought that you said that you were fired on from those curtains. They're all 15 feet from the phone.
Well, I... see here, Cranston, are you doubting my story?
No, not at all, Mr. Taylor. I'm just trying to get the facts straight.
Well, perhaps you'd better come back tomorrow morning. I can think more clearly then.
Yes, that'll give you more time.
What do you mean?
Oh, nothing, Mr. Taylor, not a thing. Good night. Margot, I called to tell you that I'm sending that box containing the Black Widow spider over to you in the morning. I want you to take it to Mr. Taylor's house. You're to seek advice from him as to whether or not it's really poisonous and pay particular attention to his reaction. In the meantime, the shadow has a call to me.
You say that you found this spider in Dr. Grant's study, Miss Lane?
Yes, that's right.
Well, why have you brought it to me?
Well, Mr. Cranston thought that you were an authority on such things and could tell us if the insect is really poisonous.
Oh, this was Mr. Cranston's idea, hmm?
Yes.
Well, my laboratory is downstairs. Would you care to come down while I make the examination?
Why, yes, thank you.
This way, please. Would you mind opening that door, Miss Lane? My shoulder, you know.
Oh, yes. How is your shoulder? Is the wound healing?
Oh, yes, very nicely. You first, Miss Lane.
All right. Is there a light?
Yes, right on the wall.
Oh. There we are. I realize that you must have many more important things to do, Mr. Taylor, than suspect a spider, but Mr. Cranston...
You needn't keep up this pretense any longer, Miss Lane. I know perfectly well why you're here, why Cranston sent you.
Mr. Taylor,
He knows that's a poisonous spider, and I believe that he has a pretty good idea what it was doing in Dr. Grant's study, doesn't he?
I don't know what you're talking about.
But he did make one mistake. He sent you here alone.
Wait a minute. I'm getting out of here.
How?
What do you mean?
That door that we entered has been locked and bolted. That's the only exit from this room. Oh, and incidentally, I might mention that the walls are soundproof. Quite immune to screams.
Well, I don't understand why you're doing this to me.
It's all very simple. You've come to me with a curiosity about poisonous black widow spiders. Because of that interest, I am going to exhibit many of them for you by turning them loose in this room.
What was that?
I forgot. We have company. Very distinguished company. A gentleman that you have heard a great deal about.
Who do you mean?
Hollister. The missing Dr. Hollister.
You had him imprisoned here? Then it wasn't Dr. Hollister who committed the murder. It was you, Mr. Taylor.
This is Dr. Hollister.
Oh. In a cage. You have him in a cage like some wild beast.
That's an excellent simile, considering his appearance at this point.
Oh, look at him. His glazed eyes and sunken cheeks.
Yes, yes. That's what comes of not eating for a week.
Why, you inhuman fiend. That man is on the verge of starvation, even death. You must release him at once.
That's what I intend to do. He shall keep you company down here while you both entertain my collection of black widow spiders. He'll be released soon. Oh, so very soon.
What are you doing?
These boxes contain the spiders. I'm going to release the catch. Then I shall leave you both here in their company. They're hungry, too.
No.
Even more hungry than Dr. Hollister. All right, Miss Lane. Now, shall we get about it? What was that?
I wouldn't release those spiders if I were you, Mr. Taylor.
Who speaks? Well, I do.
I am right here in this room with you, Mr. Taylor.
All right. I see no one.
Perhaps when I tell you my name, you'll know why.
Who are you?
Men call me the Shadow.
The Shadow? No.
So, you've heard of me. Then you know why I'm here, Mr. Taylor.
No. No, you shan't spoil my revenge. I've waited too long, too long.
Exactly. Too long and too late, Mr. Taylor.
We'll see about that.
Don't open that box.
You can't stop me.
Yes, I can by taking it away from you.
Oh, wait. What happened? Give me back that box.
So you can add to your list of victims? Sorry, Mr. Taylor.
What do you mean?
You've already killed Willoughby and Dr. Grant.
Oh, so you know that, do you? Well, what of it? What if I did kill them?
Why? Why did you do it?
Because I wanted to avenge the wrong that was done me by Hollister. He cheated me out of a fortune. A fortune. He wouldn't keep quiet about those jewels we found. No, he had to be righteous. And because of that righteousness, I've been a poor, struggling scientist all my life. That's why I killed Willoughby and Grant. So that their murders would be blamed on him.
So, you admit the killing?
Certainly, why not? None of us are leaving here anyway.
Keep away from this box of spiders.
You think your power of invisibility can conquer me, don't you, Shadow? Well, I know a way to put us on even terms. By putting out these lights.
No, stop it! Stop it!
Too late! You're too late!
Taylor!
I have also have the spiders. And when I open the box, they'll destroy you both.
Taylor, don't release those spiders, you fool.
A nice touch. Death in the dark.
They'll get you, too.
No, they won't. I shall wait in here with Dr. Hollister.
Barbara, climb to the head of the stairs.
You'll be safer there.
I'll find that light switch.
They'll find her. No matter where she goes, they'll find her.
No, they won't, Taylor.
Hollister.
You didn't pick a safe place after all.
Hollister, let go of me.
I found the light. Look, the box didn't open, Margot. The spiders are still locked up. You can release Taylor now, Dr. Hollister.
I don't think that will be necessary.
Why not?
Taylor is dead.
So you see, Margot, when I explained the whole case to Commissioner Weston, he agreed that Taylor's death should be listed as accidental.
And how is Dr. Hollister?
Oh, he'll be all right in a week or so.
Lamont, how did Taylor ever get the spider to bite Willoughby and Dr. Grant?
It was a rather ingenious device. Do you recall the gelatin-like substance that I found on the bodies of both men?
Yes.
The spider was encased in a specially prepared capsule, which in both cases Taylor slipped into the clothing of the murdered men. This capsule melted when exposed to heat, the heat of a human body.
Hmm. Our boy was very clever.
I first suspected Taylor when he chose to be shot rather than be bitten, particularly when the shot was quite obviously self-inflicted.
My boy's pretty clever, too. You know, Lamont, that for the past 3 nights, I've dreamt that spiders were crawling all over me.
Well, that's understandable.
This experience has had one regrettable effect on my life, though.
And what's that?
I shall never again enjoy reading about Little Miss Muffet.
Scary. No, that one really was scary, though, kids, huh? In fact, that was so scary, I hope they do a sequel on the wives of the victims. Call it The Black Widow's Widows, huh? Really? Though, you have to admit, though, that shadow sure knows how to spin a tail, huh? In fact, even I was thoroughly caught up in his web of intrigue, huh?
Really.
But you know, you might even go so far as to say that those creatures had me crawling the wall, huh? But I couldn't help it, really, because I thought the characters' lives were all hanging by a thread, huh? Really, though, after all, the killer was quite clever. He rarely used firearms, but instead legs. 8 of them.
Really, though.
I tell you, though, spiders within capsules. Now, that must have been a tough pill to swallow, huh?
Yes.
Arkela, he was no fool. He studied his Egyptian legends quite well. I wonder what he thought when his plan backfired. Probably curses foiled again, huh? Well, kids, I've got to fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is a count saying, the next time you're cornered by 1,000 bloodthirsty poison insects, try speaking to the audience in private. That'll give you an insect aside, huh?
Returns control of your radio device to you until next week.
No.